So welcome to another T-Rex Talk. We're gonna do something a little different, which is kind of walk around the shop and talk a little bit about our production pipeline, which we're able to do now because we're changing our production pipeline considerably. In fact, if you look around, you kind of can get the idea that we're building. This area is very much under construction. We got a bunch of different stuff happening here, and then if you look over there, we're still moving a bunch of stuff around, and I'll explain why that is in a minute. So while that thing's cutting our mold, let me tell you guys how we used to make holsters originally. So if you're not familiar with T-Rex Arms, we make a bunch of products, but primarily we make Kydex holsters. So this right here is a piece of Kydex, which is a thermoplastic that is primarily PVC based, and you heat it and you form it around a shape and it keeps that shape. And I should probably mention at this point, for those of you who are listening on the podcast, this is very much a show and tell episode, so you might want to go watch the video on YouTube, just because I'm going to be pointing at stuff and saying this is this and that is that, and probably not doing a great job of describing it in pure audio fashion. So if you head to our YouTube channel, you should see the video. And if you're on YouTube, you should be aware that we also have a podcast. If you're on YouTube right now, we're streaming this live. I am going to try to keep an eye on questions in the midst of everything that's going on and all the noise and confusion and dust. And I do have safety glasses, so I'm protected. I'm OSHA approved. They're like an amulet. You just have them and you're safe. Pretty sure that's how they work. So the way that we used to make holsters was, follow me, Chad. I know this is awkward, but we didn't build it for the sake of filming. The way that we used to heat Kydex was inside a t-shirt press like this. Technically, we still use these t-shirt presses to heat Kydex. But you throw it in there for a good long time, get it up to about 300 degrees. Then you wrap it around a gun and you squish it between two pieces of this very spongy, somewhat resistive foam, and you use a bottle jack to put a few tons of pressure on it, and that will wrap the Kydex around the shape of the gun and get you the holster shape that you want, which is not the gun, but the gun with some extra blocking so that you have spaces for some adjustability, and so that your takedown lever and your slide stop and stuff can get in and out of the holster. And so that's the way we used to do it. That's the way that we did it at the very beginning, when it was just Lucas making holsters all by himself, selling them on eBay, and then just Lucas making holsters all by himself, selling them on our website. And then gradually we added people. And so as we go through production, after the Kydex is formed, it then needs to be cut into a holster shape. Let's gently move around here. Chad almost hit the shotgun mic on top of our brand new toolbox. I was just waiting to see if that was going to happen. Here we go. Here is the exact shape of a different gun, a different holster. The Kydex is formed into this shape, and all that it needs now is some holes drilled in it for retaining hardware. Actually, you can see we've got a couple of dimples here in the blocking so that we know where to start our holes, and then we cut it into shape. So this thing is ready to go. This is when we make handcrafted holsters, which we have kind of stopped doing, but I'll get into that. Then that piece has to be brought over to have those holes drilled in it and to be cut, which is what Mr. Stokes is doing right now. So we have a bunch of stencils that help us to mark out exactly the shape that we want. And then it gets cut out on a humble bandsaw, and we get our holes drilled with a standard drill press. And then as we went, we did a lot of fit testing on glue guns to make sure that everything was lining up. The cuts were happening in the right place. The other process is using a buffing wheel to just take some of the edges off of that bandsaw cut to get the holster into a more comfortable shape so that you don't have all the same burrs and stuff going on. So the buffing wheel is actually a great way to take care of that. It's one of the dirtiest and least pleasant jobs in the shop, but it's also one of the most necessary and hardest to automate. So I'm afraid buffing wheels are probably here to stay for a while. But a lot of this stuff is actually going away. Our plan is to stop making the traditional holsters on the foam and switch everything over to CNC production, which is what I'm going to show you guys next. What we do after our, I should probably talk about hardware while we're here. So then the finished holster gets hardwared with the hardware that you see here. And so what's really cool, if you want to back up a little bit, Chad, is that what we have right here, this is the dev corner of the shop. Back there is behind the plexiglass is where the dev team works. That's my desk, and then there's some other people's desks there. And it is, you can't go back there because there might be secret stuff on the desks. And in fact, Chad, if you pan down to this whiteboard, we very carefully already like strategically cleaned parts of the whiteboard so you can't, don't linger on it too long just in case I accidentally left something there, but like, can't go into the dev space. It's also sort of under construction. But what's kind of cool is what we have right here in this area is, this is what T-Rex Arms used to be. It used to be, boy, that camera's really good at focusing on my hand when I don't want it to. This used to be what T-Rex was. It was basically this. It was a bunch of blue guns, a foam press with a bottle jack, a t-shirt heater. Well, originally it was a microwave oven. So now we have all of the parts of what T-Rex used to be all in a little piece over here by dev for prototyping, for testing, for warranty, for nostalgia, like a little museum. But the way that we currently make most of our holsters is on CNC machines. So let's go take a look at that. I'm gonna hold the door open for you, Chad, partly so you don't trip. Also, so you don't accidentally sweep the camera into the dev space. I trust you, Chad, just maybe not quite that much. So here we have our CNC machines. So here is one, and over there are another two CNC machines that we make holsters on. And so the way that this works, we should probably do this side, it's a little bit easier to see. Instead of using the foam presses, we use vacuum forms over there. So we grab a form, which is exactly like the one that's being cut on the little mini shop bot over there that you saw at the beginning of the video, and we create this form. This is for a left-handed Glock X300 sidecar. So we've got one half of the gun, the other half of the gun, one half of the mag, the other half of the mag. We heat up Kydex inside a t-shirt press, which we've got over there, and then vacuum form the Kydex on top of this mold. And then when we take the finished Kydex, oh, there we go. It looks a little something like this. Now, for some reason, this is a reject piece of Kydex. Something didn't work here, but you get the general idea. And then, after you cut it out on the CNC machine, you have something like this. So this is the waist, and inside of here are the two halves of a T-Rex Arms sidecar. So the CNC machines come along and cut out the two halves of the holster, and that is the way that we're doing most of the holsters now. In fact, that's technically the way that we're doing all of the holsters except for the ones that Mr. Stokes is finishing right now. So if you have noticed this on the T-Rex website, there's a bunch of holster options that used to exist in the drop-down menu that are no longer there. We used to make things for FN, VP9, PO9, M9. There's a lot of 9 holsters out there that we don't make anymore, but that's temporary. We're getting rid of the traditional manufacturing and removing everything to CNC machine, but we're not ready to bring all those holsters back to CNC machine quite yet because we're right in the middle of kind of rebuilding everything. All of that area is under construction because we are revamping our production pipeline. Hopefully that works. I really hope that that works. But once we get that done, we're actually going to have a faster development time, so it's quicker to actually bring new holster models onto the CNC machines. Faster production time, so the holsters actually get made faster and get shipped faster. It will improve everything, and all of these improvements that we want to make are tricky to do because we're still making holsters, except for a few. We're still shipping holsters, and we're trying to move everything around inside of the shop where we have somewhat limited space. It's actually a little bit tricky. I said a couple of weeks ago, I think in a live, that it's a little bit like changing the tires on your car while you're driving. A couple of people in the shop took issue with that analogy. They said that it's actually more like rebuilding your transmission while you're on the on-ramp, accelerating to get onto the highway. And I agree, that's probably a more apt comparison. So we took traditionals, which were all the way over there in that partly empty looking part of the shop, and we turned off the traditional forming molds and models, all those models off of the website. Again, they're coming back, so don't worry about it. You just can't order them right now. And we moved the capability to make those so that we can keep doing warranties. So if you had an FN 509T holster and it's no longer available for purchase on the website, but you already got one and it broke, we can still fix it, we can still warranty it and get you a new one. We're just not taking any more orders for them right now. All of traditionals had to move out of that space so that all of buffing can move into that space, so that something else can move to where buffing is, so that something else can move to where bending is, so that bending can move out of the way to make room for something else, and then we can take these CNC machines and line them up in a slightly different configuration, and that will give us room to move molding up there, and then we might have something, like a slightly better production line. Which kind of brings me to a question that some of you have already asked, and that is, how do you scale something like this? So when we started out doing holster production in there, and all we were doing was this very simple mold a holster inside a foam press, drill it on a drill press, cut it on a bandsaw. When you double the amount of holsters that you make, it's a very simple thing to scale. You just need two buffing wheels instead of one, two drill presses instead of one, two bandsaws instead of one, and two people making holsters instead of one. Now you've doubled. But as you scale, the question then becomes, how do you most efficiently scale? Do you just scale in that same direction until you have 100 drill presses and 100 bandsaws and 100 people making holsters one at a time in that exact same fashion? Or do you look into automation? And so it was, I think about 5 years ago now, that we wanted to get into automation for our high volume holsters, which are predominantly the Glock holsters. I think that was actually even before the P320 came along. It was certainly before the P320 was popular. And what we did was we crunched the numbers, we did the math, and we did a bunch of research and got a used shop bot from a sign maker down in New Orleans, brought it back and tinkered with it until we could get it to cut clips and cut claws. And then as it was cutting clips and claws and starting to pay for itself, we started to do the work on developing the holsters. And once we had got it making holsters, it wasn't that long before we wanted two machines. And as you can see, we now have four machines set up that are making holsters. None of them are operating right now because generally the way that our production cycle works, we try to be done with this side of holster production by 3 or 4 o'clock, and those holsters are going through the rest of the pipeline. So it's kind of hard to see through all of the layers of the plastic, but there are guys working on buffing and bending holsters over there. Chad, you don't have quite enough slack to go over there, but can you kind of see what's going on? Sort of. If you turn around, Chad, you can actually get a better view of it over here, perhaps. So, yeah, look right over there on the monitor. I think it's a little easier. Oh, wait a minute. That's not quite how that works. A little too meta, you guys. All right. So once we switched over to the CNC machines, we made all of our high volume holsters on the CNC machines. We made all of our low volume holsters on the foam presses the same way. And that system worked out relatively well. But God continued to grow T-Rex as a company. We continued to get new customers. We continued to get more orders. And so we've been asking that question again of how we scale. Do we just buy more ShopBots? And the answer is obviously yes, we bought more ShopBots. But do we just keep buying more and more and more ShopBots, or do we look for ways to squeeze more efficiency out of what we're doing with the tools that we have, which is what we are trying to do. So let's go back out to where I think it was a little quieter, possibly. One of the things that we have to help us be more efficient is we have a tool that will help us to make more tools, better tooling, better automation for ourselves. So this over here is a Haas machine. This was a considerably larger investment than that first used ShopBot. Actually, I should, let's throw some numbers out there. So the first ShopBot that we bought was $8,000 because it was heavily used. And that was a very difficult financial decision to decide whether or not that was good stewardship. This was a little bit more expensive, but we were a large enough company that we felt like we could justify it. Get in a little closer, Chad, and have a look at the aluminum being just ripped off of there by that powerful, powerful bit. Now, what we are doing here is we're making some tooling that's going to help us be faster and more precise and more efficient in some of our production. I don't want to talk too much about that because, well, there's two reasons that I don't want to get into the mechanics of every little bit of what we're trying to do next. There's two reasons for that. One of them is a selfish reason, and that is I would like to get a little bit of a head start, figure out the new production tools, the new clamping, the new work holding and stuff like that, and get a little bit of a head start over other holster makers for which how it works. And then the other reason is a little more selfless. I don't want to tell a bunch of other holster makers what they should be doing next when it's completely untested and possibly doesn't work at all, which there's always a chance of that. But this stuff right here is aluminum chips, slightly less user-friendly than HDPE chips that we're making on this mold over here. It's nice when we have a number of machines running all working on stuff. So this is making new molds for a new system. This is making new tools for a new system. We're actually making really good headway on everything that we need to, I'm not even sure what to call it. If it's, we have so slowly and steadily increased production and increased the way that we do things. This isn't like the second generation or the third generation. It's just kind of ongoing improvement, which is good. Constant improvement is something you're supposed to do. Business books say that, so it's probably a good thing. And then while we're over here by the very loud mini ShopBot that's still cutting, I will talk briefly about some of the improvements that we have made. One of them is that we're doing a lot more of our design work inside of Fusion 360 now, which hasn't saved us any time yet, but it will in the future. If you want to know how we were doing things in the past, there are some videos on the YouTube channel. I was using Lightwave, which is an animation package, using Aspire, which is a woodworking package, and it was working great. But as we have grown the dev department, which is another thing that I want to talk about, industry standard tools do begin to have an advantage. And over there, you can see, Chad, just give them just like a hint, just like a little glimpse of stuff that's on that machine. Don't linger on it too long, but okay, that's long enough. Go. We're making some aluminum fixtures and aluminum clamps for work holding, which will allow us to be a little more efficient and a little faster with certain things. So if you noticed on the ShopBots over here, we have a whole bunch of molds on the table. So every one of those molds represents one type of gun. And then, you know, like, so that Glock sidecar mold we were looking at earlier lets us cut the Glock 19, the Glock 17, the Glock 34. and all of the Gen 1 through 4 40 cal versions, etc., etc. All of the small frame Glocks. Actually, we can't call them that anymore because the 43s, 48s, etc. But all of the make and model of that Glock we can cut on that form. But we cannot cut other stuff on that form. It's only the Glock X300s. If we come up with a universal system that works, then it'll be a little bit easier to really quickly bring models over there because we'll be able to cut a bunch of stuff on different molds. That's what we've been working on. If you look back through some of the other live streams, we talked about experiments that we are doing with pneumatic work holding and the ability to cut aluminum so that we have better tolerances on some of these things make some of that stuff possible. So yeah, I'm excited. But it's also a very interesting, complicated problem. Do we have enough floor space to actually move everything around while we are still in production, keep shipping all the orders that we get, and build a new production engine that works, and do a whole bunch of new tools and a bunch of new procedures that are, they've been tested in little bits and pieces. We haven't been able to test all of everything together quite yet, except for this last week we did have a test of some new software, a new mold, a new work holding thing, a new material, and a new bending process, and the holster came out feeling really, really nice first try, which is a vindication of all of those new things in some ways. Either that or it's a fluke. It's one of the two. Vindication or just a complete coincidence, a random anomaly. So it's going to be an interesting thing as we continue to go through here. And one of the things that I do want to talk about is the ability that we have to do some of these things has only come about as the company has grown. So part of it is the ability to invest in an expensive machine like that, but another part of it is just the company is big enough. We have so many people working on holster production now that we have a lot more people contributing ideas to how things can be improved. There was a time when every holster that was made on a CNC machine was made by me because I was the only one that knew how the CNC machines worked. But then as we added people and added CNC machines, we added people who were not just making holsters, but thinking through the production process and making improvements to their stations or making improvements to the pipeline or making suggestions in ways that molds or models or the way that we go about creating holsters could be done. And that has been hugely helpful and important. So I see Judd over there cleaning out the Haas machine. Judd is our first credentialed engineer. He's the first professional who actually knows how to do stuff and how stuff works. And that's an extremely huge advantage over my engineering ability, which is all learned in the last 5 years through trial and error using plastic, HDPE, MDF, and drywall screws. Those are my engineering tools of choice. So, the number of things that we can actually make at this point is really helpful. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we were just randomly cobbling together that now we have kind of a much better idea of how to build. So, we weren't using pneumatic air for clamping or for movement. We were using electrical solenoids for our vacuum setup. So, over there on the far side where we're doing our vacuum, when you close the vacuum formers, there's a sensor, there's a switch on some of them, it's a magnetic sensor that opens up the vacuum as soon as the lid is closed. So we had experimented with that a little bit, but one of the things that we're gonna do more in the future is we're gonna have a lot more pneumatic air pressure for clamping and for work holding. So there's gonna be a lot less for the operator to do. It'll be putting the thing down and hitting a foot pedal or putting the thing down and there'll be a sensor. Pneumatic air pressure will clamp it or hold it, and the person will just have less that he has to do, more stuff will be automated, and that'll let everybody go faster. But it should also increase the precision, which is a huge help. We've gotten our error rate down quite a bit over the last few years, and Kydex is a really forgiving material, and holsters are technically really fairly easy to make. But every little bit of extra precision that we can bring to the process does improve the product. And it means that our tolerance stacking becomes less of an issue. And we can more consistently produce a really top-notch product, not just a acceptable, it works product, which is something that we've been striving for. Oh. All right, have a look at this here. Judd, I was just praising you for your knowledge and your know-how, and now you've discovered it all by putting this. This is a Comic Sans.
At least it's not papyrus.
I asked for papyrus or better. So I can't tell you exactly what this is for, but I can tell you that it has Comic Sans on it. All right, so this is revision one. Revision two will be Ariel Helvetica or Grotesque Semi-Condensed Bold.
I don't think
Do I make myself clear?
Has a MacBook.
That's true. We're kind of a Mac-free machine shop at the moment. Thank you, Chad. Wow, we spent a lot of money on that machine just so we could carve stuff in Comic Sans onto our new Ben jigs. Not entirely sure how I feel about that. Okay, I'd like to take some questions now. We're about a half an hour into our live stream. There's a couple things, lessons that we've learned that I think are important, but I'll try to take some questions first. As usual, there's a bunch of people watching and there's a ton of random questions in here. People asking about when certain holsters are coming. The answer is later. Will we ever make the jump to injection molding? We actually have a number of parts that are injection molded. We are not doing the injection molding here in-house. It is happening in another shop, which is nearby. I think it's about 30 minutes away. They're doing all of our injection molding for us. Theoretically, we could make the molds here inside of the Haas machine, but that's not something we're currently planning to do. It's not something we've done before, although one of the guys on the dev team has made injection molding equipment before, so technically we have a guy with the know-how, but not anytime soon. How have the 3D printers benefited? Yeah, over there in the dev area, which you cannot look at because it's not quite safe yet and is also not quite finished, we have a couple of 3D printers. We have a filament printer, we have a resin printer, and we have used those to prototype all of the injection molded parts and a number of other parts. We've made clamps and jigs that we've used for other stuff. In fact, even back in the day when we were only doing the foam molding, and technically before I was working at T-Rex, I did make a bunch of 3D models that we 3D printed and taped or glued or epoxy to some of those blue guns to make holsters on. The original Ragnaroks, before they were made on CNC machines, actually had 3D printed blocking on them. So we've been using 3D printers for a while, and they're just getting better and better and cheaper to operate. So highly recommend that those of you who are interested in manufacturing, look into 3D printers, because that will get you it's a great starting point. A lot of the design considerations are things that you can learn and experiment with on a $200 3D printer. And they're worth having for a lot of gun control related reasons that I'm not going to elaborate on a live YouTube, but you can maybe connect the dots. Just a handy thing to have in your local community. People asking for holsters for very obscure firearms, probably not. Wish you guys could make a light for smaller, thinner Glocks. Yeah, so a lot of people have a much higher opinion of what T-Rex is capable of than I think is justified. I mean, we're having trouble just moving all of the furniture and operational stuff around in the shop in order to improve things for plastic holsters, let alone like a light, which needs to be waterproof and needs to deal with different voltages and needs to be recoil sensitive or not recoil sensitive. I don't think we're quite ready to create weapon lights at this point. We have very little electrical engineering capability in-house. Bunch of people talking about 3D printers. 3D printers will always have limitations. This is true. Additive machining has pros and cons, just like subtractive machining. Absolutely. There are machines that kind of sort of do both, which are incredibly powerful and cool, but I feel like they're not quite there yet as far as production readiness. So The fact that we have the ability to do additive manufacturing for our rapid prototyping, and we have the ability to do subtractive machining for actual metal production parts or actual tooling, that is huge. And the other thing is, it's not as rare as you might think. So where T-Rex Arms is located in Tennessee is in an industrial park. In this industrial park, this is not the only Sirius Haas vertical milling center. I think it is the 10th or the 11th or possibly the 12th of these that is just on this little industrial park, many of which, and I would say this is the smallest and the weakest. So you would be surprised how much manufacturing capability exists in little tiny out of the way industrial parks and what is actually capable of being produced. And we used to work with the guys next door and they made a ton of great parts for us, but being able to have this in-house, being able to go faster, being able to really quickly develop things, make iterations that same day, like fixing the font so that it's not Comic Sans, and then cutting a good one, I mean a better one, I mean a usable one that doesn't have Comic Sans on it. The ability to do that in-house same day is phenomenal. And another thing that's kind of interesting is in 2020, the demand for local manufacturing at that level just skyrocketed. And so the guys next door that we have been working with were just booked solid. And so that's the other reason that it's handy to have this capability in-house. But again, this is an awesome piece of equipment. It is an incredibly powerful tool. We are only scratching the surface of what this tool is capable of. And yet, there's like a dozen of these things in our tiny little Hickman County Industrial Park. And that is a very, very cool thing. So I think that there's a very significant amount of opportunity in this area. And I'm looking forward to seeing where things go in the future, not only for our company, but for other companies. And let's see some other questions. What do you guys think about German Shepherds? Unrelated, but very cool. Show us the missile room. No, not going to show you the missile room. A shout out to Caleb in the customer service department. Yes, the customer service department. We need to do another stream with the customer service guys because I feel like that is the secret weapon or the secret sauce or the most important part of what T-Rex is doing. I am very focused on the production side of things, the design and development of new products. It's super fun. It scratches all of the artistic and creative and engineering itches of my brain. But as cool as all that is, that's not the coolest part of T-Rex. Serving the customer and figuring out what the customer actually needs is the most important part. Having a relationship with the customer, helping the customer to solve problems is a far better description of the T-Rex goal than make cool stuff or make stuff faster or make stuff better. And so the customer service department is, I would say that they're the unsung heroes of T-Rex, except they're not entirely unsung. I think a lot of you guys recognize and appreciate and value the customer service team. And we do internally, we just forget to mention it sometimes. So that is an incredibly important part of the T-Rex family and the T-Rex system. Do the principles of Lean, Six Sigma drive your process refinement? Yes, kind of. Most of the time, but not always. And I'll explain why. There's a tremendous amount of value to Lean manufacturing principles, which are primarily developed by Toyota or Six Sigma principles. And there's a lot of value there, but at the same time, some of those things, and we've talked about this before, some of those things that are positioned toward or prioritize maximum efficiency are good if your goal is maximum efficiency. And our goal is efficiency, but not at the cost of resiliency. We're trying to make T-Rex a very anti-fragile company. We would like to be very resilient. We would like to be prepared for changes in the market, changes in supply line. We would like to be prepared for all kinds of different things. And sometimes that preparedness has to come at the cost of efficiency. So we have a not entirely lean approach. There are certain things that we do, like Chad, if your HDMI cable were long enough, we could go into the Kydex room and you could see that we store a lot more Kydex than we should for maximum efficiency. And the reason for that is we would like to have stockpiles, strategic reserves of Kydex so that we're ready for hiccups in the supply chain. Now, obviously, there are ways in which that's not completely contrary to Lean or the Toyota way or Six Sigma, but there's other ways that are a little bit harder to describe where we have focused a little bit more on resiliency than on ultimate efficiency. We would like to have extra manufacturing capability. We'd like to have a little bit of extra manpower than we technically need so that we're ready for spikes in demand, so that we're ready for emergencies, so that we can more easily cover for people if they have a family emergency or they have some other project. So a couple of guys in the shop, actually, two, three, there's a number of people in the shop who are first responders in different areas. And we like for those guys to be flexible enough that even in the middle of a workday, they can go and they can take care of emergencies. And so that's something that has to kind of be built into the company. And that comes at the cost of ruthless efficiency, but it's just a little higher priority for us than ruthless efficiency. So just kind of have to build it into the business model. Hopefully that answers that question. Yeah, the answer is yes, kind of. Couple of people offering product improvements. There's lots of opportunities for product improvements. Should I buy a TLR7 or an X300 or wait for... Do you know if there's a certain company that's coming out with a pistol light later? Do you know if that's totally like private, quiet, secret? People on here are talking about it. Should we talk about it? It depends on what you want. The light that you are talking about, which I don't know what it is, of course, but the light that you are talking about is a larger light. So if you want a smaller inside the waistband light that's comfortable to carry, I would go with the TLR7 because the light that you are discussing that cannot be spoken of is a larger light and is not a tiny light. So the light that I'm currently carrying is the TLR7. That is my concealed carry light. I think it's pretty solid, and I'm really not too worried about the lack of lumens just because of how small and compact it is, and I really like the switches. The ergonomics of that light are really good. Can I say hello if I see you at Lowe's or Walmart? You can. You'll recognize me because I'm the guy not wearing a mask, and I look like this. What radio should I upgrade to after a Baofeng? There's a whole bunch of radio questions. We'll probably have to do another radio live. Again, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do. That's what we said last time. What is the weirdest song that you like? Charles, are you banning people as effectively as you could be? Okay. Maybe you all should manufacture ammo because there is never enough. That is 100% true. There's never enough ammo. But manufacturing ammo is a lot more complicated than most people think that it is. It's not something that is on our immediate to-do list. It's the bottlenecks are at this point, the primers. That is really, really hard to make. It's really, really hard to get set up to make that. And there are other companies that are better suited to get set up to make primers from scratch here in the country. And there are a couple people who are trying to do that. But ammo production is actually really, really really, really good right now. The problem is just that demand is even better. I see that as a good thing, except that I need more practice ammo. Actually, there's a bunch of stuff that have been on my to-buy lists that I just haven't been able to buy, stuff that I should have bought in 2019, and I had no idea how painful procrastination was going to be for me. There's a bunch of people in here asking questions about flannel shirts. You know who to ask about flannel shirts. He has his own channel. Just noticed the dinosaur footprints on the floor. Yes, you have to follow the dinosaur footprints to get out of the building. These are the OSHA-required lanes. Everything that we do is completely OSHA-compatible and compliant, and then has a little bit of T-Rex flair on top of it. So, but yeah. These are important questions, you guys. So one of the things that I want to talk about that I really appreciate is the dev team. I don't think any of them are back there at the moment, but the dev team has really grown, and I am so appreciative of having extra people be part of this company. I don't have a ton of experience with product development or engineering. I came out of, I hate to admit this, but I came out of kind of the entertainment industry, film, television, visual effects, animation, and so being a part of physical product creation is incredibly fun for me. And one of the things that is interesting is just, I love the collaborative nature of some of the stuff that we are doing here. And that is, by the way, the best part of filmmaking. The best part of filmmaking is when a team comes together and creates a product that none of them could have created apart from one another. When all of the artistic and scientific disciplines that are filmmaking come together and a team of people who are excellent craftsmen make something that is great. I love that, and I would miss it if I weren't doing something that is actually kind of similar here. And one of the things that I love about a bigger dev department that's not just me is that two heads are better than one for everything that we're doing here, and five or six heads is way better than one. So I know that within the industry, there are some genius designers who work alone. Throughout the past, we often think of designers like John Moses Browning, who is just the greatest firearm designer of all time, or Eugene Stoner, being men who really stand apart. And they do, but they also had teams of men that helped them be successful in what they accomplished. And that is true of T-Rex. We have a phenomenal team here that is helping us to do the things that we want to do. So there's an idea going back to filmmaking, you might question this idea because you have probably noticed that the movies that have the most screenwriters are the worst, especially like the Transformers movies. The more writers a Transformer movie has, the worse that it is, and it's already starting at a terrible, terrible place. Occasionally, you need the single-handed, unified vision of someone with a strong, creative sense. That's not the Transformer franchise, but at least you get my idea. Now, for television comedy writing, though, you need a team. You get much better results from a team. And for holster development and production design and stuff that we're doing at T-Rex, we get a phenomenal benefit from the team working together to build stuff. And that is a hugely important lesson that we have been learning. And it's not just adding somebody like Judd, who is an engineer, who has tremendous experience and who is brilliant, to the team so that he can do brilliant engineering stuff, font choices notwithstanding. It is everybody on the team contributing stuff that they notice, or brilliant ideas that they have, or even just remembering stuff. There was something that I wanted to explore in the future, and I put it on my sort of to-do in the future list, and I completely forgot about it. And out of the blue, someone was like, you know what? I was doing some testing later in the evening after you went home, and I think that we need to try membraneless forming, which was on my to-do list, but someone else made it happen. And it's not like that's a genius move on its own. That's just wanting to explore ways of improving the product for the customer, wanting to serve the customer, and also wanting to take care of the team over here so that we come up with ways where it's easier to make the holsters and it's safer to make the holsters and it's harder to make mistakes. That's a way where we serve the rest of the team at the same time. And when those guys come to us with ideas, that is also an incredibly helpful part of the process. And I kind of make it sound like an us them, people who make holsters in production and people who design stuff for production. There used to be a lot more overlap, but the fact is I am way out of practice making holsters. I haven't made holsters since, this year during the big ice storm, I made some holsters. And it turns out, I kind of sort of remember how, but it also turns out that I'm kind of not supposed to make holsters anymore. So we're not purposefully separating dev and production, except that production would prefer that we not mess up orders, which is fair. Let me look at some other questions. Give me some questions about our specific process or some of the other lessons that we've learned, perhaps. I'm sure that I'm overlooking some important lessons that we have learned. One of the things that I kind of touched on earlier is how you scale. When is it that you actually make the decision to do something risky, like invest in a bigger, more powerful machine, instead of just scaling by buying another drill press, buying another bandsaw? Wait until you have the volume, buy another drill press, buy another bandsaw. That's a very hard question to answer, but one of the things that has been tremendously helpful for T-Rex is we have always tried, it's been our goal from the beginning, to build this company debt-free, so that at no point were any of our decisions based on a bunch of payments that were coming in the future and were completely non-negotiable. Now, obviously, when we buy amounts of Kydex and they come net 30, we obviously have bills in the future that we know we're gonna have to pay, but not being in debt is a huge thing. It frees us up tremendously and it let us do things that are, it makes things that are risky less risky. It doesn't take the risk away completely, but it tremendously downgrades the risk. And it allows you to calculate what the risk is in a much more accurate way. So one of the things that Dave Ramsey says, obviously this is a Dave Ramsey point, try to do stuff without debt. One of the things that Dave Ramsey said was, he was describing his company and he said, we built our company on 10% of our ideas and we narrowly survived the other 90% of our ideas, which we wouldn't have done if we were in debt. And I think the T-Rex is exactly the same way. We've gotten here on our most basic ideas. We've narrowly survived some other ideas. And by being debt-free, we have had less risk that we have had to carry with us, which means that we can experiment more. And fortunately, we are in a growth industry and we're in a niche industry. And that has really helped a lot. So I would advocate that those of you who are asking questions like, "What? How can I get involved in the industry? What should I start with? Is this a good industry to get involved in?" Figure out customers that you can serve. But I would say there's a tremendous advantage to the manufacturing side of things. So right now these CNC machines are set up for holster production. If for some reason the market dried up and went away, or the Biden administration did something, there's a bunch of other stuff that we could make on these machines. There's a bunch of other stuff we could make with our vacuum formers. There's a bunch of other stuff that we could make with the tools that are here. There's a bunch of things that the team that is here could make. So that is a tremendously helpful thing. And another thing is we have invested in tangible tools that in an emergency we could sell and not just cut employees off completely. I love tech and software development, but one of the things that's slightly annoying to me is you have no assets to sell off if you absolutely have to liquidate them in the same way that you do when you have tangible tools. And you have tools that can make other tools. That's one way that I feel like you can mitigate risk. I used a T-Rex holster last year at a class, and then the instructor bought a few above and beyond. Thank you very much. We have tried to improve quality, and when we get our new setup and we get our new production workflow and we get some of our new forms and jigs and clamps in place, I think we're going to get consistency. What single tool or process improve your production scalability the most? I think in some ways it would be easy to say it was the CNC machines. But the CNC machines actually added so many steps to development that may not be accurate. One tool that helped tremendously with something we were already doing was our 3D scanner. And this is actually kind of an interesting point. Part of the reason that I didn't want to show you guys all of our new jigs, explain exactly how they work, and why they're better than the old system is that they're not production tested yet. And I feel like a number of holster manufacturers are watching what we are doing, and which I am tremendously flattered by. And hopefully I'm not presuming too much, but when we started using the particular 3D scanner that we did, and when we started making videos showing how we were using it, I noticed a bunch of other holster makers beginning to use that same 3D scanner, which I'm really glad about. That 3D scanner was a risk because no other holster makers were using it on YouTube. I was mostly looking at, I did a lot of research on that weird Chinese 3D scanner and I could not answer all the questions 100%. So we kind of pulled the trigger on one, and I wanted to make that research available to other holster makers. And so every time I see another holster maker using that 3D scanner, I don't know for sure that they watched our videos about it or they are necessarily following us, but if they did, then hopefully our research and us taking that risk made it less risky for them, because we proved that it actually had the accuracy for scanning firearms and making holsters around them. So that 3D scanner was an incredibly useful tool, because prior to that, I had a gun and calipers, and slide was easy to measure, and everything else was really hard to measure, and it took a lot more revisions to get 3D modeled right. So, yeah. What are some other things, Charles, that we should talk about while we're covering production? Efficiency expert. Yeah, someone asked about efficiency expert. We do not have an efficiency expert on staff. We have a pastry chef, kind of on staff, part-time, possibly a contractor, because technically she uses her own tools. We don't have a complete pastry kitchen setup yet, but a good friend of ours is an efficiency expert who's worked in manufacturing in large companies, and he was able to come out a number of times at different stages of the company and give us different advice. And at different sizes of the company, he had different advice for us, and at certain points he was like, you gotta start doing this now. And then a couple months later, he's like, okay, now it's time to stop doing that and do this instead. But even around the shop now, I can see things right now that he told us to do that are still the right way to do them. So that was tremendously helpful. And I will say that another part of the T-Rex growth story is that was a friend from church. Most of the relationships that the original T-Rex growth curve represents was built up by friends from church. It's people that we already had relationships through church coming on and being part of the team or giving advice, like this efficiency expert. It was a group of people that God had already put together in a church that already knew each other, trusted each other, were excited about what each other were doing, wanted to see each other succeed, and a ton of people came along and were incredibly gracious and helpful to what we were trying to do. It's a huge part of where we are today. So I don't want to ever forget that or let that be lost. But now we are big enough that we're continually hiring people that are not from our own local church and bringing on experts and consultants from farther afield. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that that's the really, really where stuff started from, and that it was really something that a group of people that God put together long before we had the idea of T-Rex or had any inkling of that T-Rex would be doing quite as many things as T-Rex is currently doing. And actually, I was thinking about it, Charles. On the one hand, it feels like God made a really interesting team out of just random people in that church. But there's some people that don't work at T-Rex at that church, imagine that. And I actually feel like some of those people could go and start a better T-Rex. They're actually better equipped to do some of the stuff that we are doing now. Better at business, better military experience, better manufacturing capability, better engineering background. Like, those, I don't want to call them the leftovers, but it almost feels like you could build a better T-Rex from the leftovers. So it's really fascinating the way that God brings people together. And God is starting to bring people together into the T-Rex company and in the T-Rex family from outside of any one single church, which is also really encouraging and helpful to see. So that efficiency expert was a very helpful person. I never know whether we should say people's names if they want their names here. How do you guys source your materials? As locally as possible. We're trying to do things as locally as possible now. That's kind of a lesson that we learned in 2020, but it was also a goal that we had prior to that. We get a ton of stuff through McMaster Car, but we're also trying to get stuff as locally as possible. McMaster is just, they have the best website, they have the best catalog, and we're very close to their Georgia location, so stuff usually comes next day, so it's really hard to not just order from McMaster, but we're trying to work with a lot of local material suppliers as well. Do you use Mighty Bite clamps in your CNC machines? Not yet. I don't believe that our Mighty Bites have made anything yet. I think we've done everything with the orange vise, but we have a couple of things that are getting Mighty Bited. shortly. Let's talk about current product and raw material shortages. Most of that is in the nylon and textile area. We actually have been able to get Kydex hardware, raw injection molding materials. We've been able to get that pretty consistently, but Velcro, elastic, Cordura, other nylon related stuff, that has been really hard to come by. Sometimes across the board, sometimes only certain colors. And that's not unique to 2020. There have been a lot of times in the past where there's a major DoD order somewhere and a specific color of Cordura and a specific weight of Cordura is just gone for months because it all got bought up by somebody who was making something for the US Army. But in 2020, there were some major supply line disruptions which affected things even more than that. So yeah. Lucas is out shopping for a Dushka probably. Oh, I wish. He's doing something important, but unfortunately it's not quite that fun or that cool. New clamps, technology. You know, the chat's not quite as bad as it is some weeks. people saying that they recently bought a CZ. Yeah, so I mentioned this earlier in the stream, but people are popping in and out. So as we are reflowing our production line, we are planning to bring back a bunch of models that we took off the website. So a bunch of the CZs and a bunch of various other types of holster are off the website for now, but they will be coming back later once we finish reorganizing everything and once we finish rebuilding some of our processes. And I'm sorry that we had to do it that way, but I really cannot think of any other way that we would have done that. Those are a pretty small percentage of orders, but for those of you that need a left-handed X300 PO9 holster, you really wanted to buy one. And hopefully we're bringing those things back pretty soon, but we had to take those off the website so that we could make space in the back to move some of the stuff from over there so that some of the stuff from over here could move over there, so that some of the stuff over there could move over here, so that some of the stuff in the middle could reshuffle so that we could put conveyor belts in so that we could make holsters faster. Hopefully that's something that is a pretty short process. I don't want to commit to anything on record for when we think stuff will come back, but just know that we want to bring it back and we're going as fast as we can. Once a week, we have to take T-Rex live stream breaks. But other than that, we're working more or less as fast as we can to get production up and running on the new system. And then it might be a little bit longer because we probably need a few weeks to troubleshoot the new system. Probably have a few things to fix in the new system. But then after that, we're going to try to bring back as many of those lower volume holsters as possible. So definitely the FN509, that is a high priority one. There's a lot of different CZ models, so not all of them are as high priority as others. If CZ starts making really cool Colt stuff, that might be a higher priority just because those would be things that we would want. But yeah, CZ, VP9, there's a bunch of stuff that we want to bring back. We want to make stuff for as soon as we can. Just got a lot of house cleaning and regular stuff to do. ETA on light bearing 43X MOS holsters. That's highly dependent on the MOS compatible lights. We're waiting very much for those to be on the market so that we can have some to test and to play with. And then as soon as we have those, we'll be able to do support. We do want to test stuff though. We have tended to not support stuff that we haven't tested. And certain things require different levels of testing. So for example, when we were working with the PDP earlier this year, we already had tremendous trust for Walther because of what the PPQ was and experience with the PPQ. So we really wanted to work with the PDP, but it wasn't like, we didn't put it through the ringer because we already had a certain level of trust in Walther. So some of the lights that are coming for these smaller frame MOS guns, different levels of trust, different levels of testing need to go into those, so we'll see. But I will say, a 43X with a Shield Arms S15 magazine and a light of some sort, whether it's going to be the XCS or the TLR7 sub, that's a pretty potent package, especially if you get a threaded barrel for the 43X and you put one of those little pillbox suppressors on it. Maybe we should make a holster for that, like for that specifically. That would be fun. People asking for Sig Mark 25. We do support the Sig Mark 25 on the Ragnaroks. Oh, that's another thing. The Ragnaroks are staying the way that they are while we reshuffle production. It's difficult, but that's the plan. That's what we're trying to do. That'll be good. Does the time of orders stay consistent or do they slow down sometimes? They definitely, orders ebb and flow, and the speed that orders move through the system changes a little bit depending on certain things. Generally speaking, it's a workflow issue, but once we start moving these CNC machines around, that's probably going to affect the speed at which we can make things. In fact, once we get into a really heavy reorganization, we might bump up our lead time by a few days just to make sure that we're covered and make sure that we can keep up with demand and we can meet our promises. Ah, and people are pointing out that it is St. Patrick's Day. I forgot to mention that. I'm wearing kind of green. If I were in a place with better acoustics and my voice wasn't so tired, I would sing St. Patrick's Breastplate, which is an awesome song. You should go and look up the lyrics to St. Patrick's Breastplate. It is a fantastic battle hymn that you guys should all be familiar with. But I'm not going to sing it right now. I'm just going to have to go read the lyrics. People asking about various stock-related things. People asking for Steyr M1912 holsters. Browning 25 holsters. Yes, those are coming. Those are coming. The next time that we need to start a world war, we'll probably make holsters for those. Absolutely. Has Kydex production been affected? Not particularly. The Kydex that we're using is mostly coming from with inside the United States, and so supply lines were less affected by that over the last year. People commenting on my hair. Yes, I remember to put something in my hair today. So if my wife is watching, I finally remembered to do it for the live stream. Might be a first. Let's convince Isaac to make a Deagle sidecar since Lucas isn't here. If we're going to do that, it's probably going to be a double. Double Deagles is probably what we have to do. We've talked about that several times, Turtles. It's on the to-do list, kind of. We have multiple to-do lists here. We have immediate to-do lists. We have soon to-do lists. And then we have the to-do list that the Deagle sidecar is on. There's a lot of stuff on that to-do list. The corn dog holsters, a lot of things are on there. So, yeah. And in some ways, that's been one of the hardest things about scaling T-Rex. It hasn't so much been the difficulty in keeping up with demand. That's been rough, but it's been something that's been a really interesting challenge. And God has really blessed us to be able to find the people where we've been able to do it. And finding the right equipment is something that has been a bit of a challenge sometimes, but it's been really fun. It's been a very enjoyable challenge to figure out which equipment we should buy and then learn how to use it. That's actually been incredibly fun. But as T-Rex has grown, one of the things that has been a frustration is there's less time to mess around and tinker with stuff. So something like a Deagle sidecar. I think we did make one just to use in a video. But projects like that were much easier to do and much easier for me to be a part of back when T-Rex was a little bit smaller. One of the things that I made pretty early on, I made a whole bunch of scuba diving nav boards, which was earlier in my T-Rex career, also back when I was doing more scuba diving. And I just haven't had time for stuff like that, either the diving or making those kind of specialized pieces of equipment. So that is something that hopefully after we get a lot of our major to-do lists taken care of, not the Deagle to-do list, not the corndog to-do list, but some of our immediate emergency finish this giant reorganization project to-do list, maybe we can get back to some of that some of that weirder stuff. But we'll see. 2020 was a year where there was unbelievable demand and supply chain issues, and we spent a lot of the time just running to catch up. It felt like the whole year was catch up. We never really had the initiative. We were always kind of reacting to what was going on. We had projects in the works that we had started earlier, and we worked on those, but a lot of stuff was just, demand is higher, what do we do to make those holsters? And it kind of remains to be seen what 2021 looks like. I think we have a better chance of getting out ahead of what is happening in 2021 and being a little bit more proactive and a little bit less reactive, but we'll see. There's a lot of stuff that could happen this year, and we'll just have to see what's coming down the pike. It's gonna be an interesting year, but we're gonna continue to be focused on improving the product that we have, adding capability to other products, and finding out what customers need so that we can meet them. So please continue to stay in touch with us. Please continue to stay in touch with our customer service guys so we know what issues you guys are having, either with our equipment or what things you are particularly looking for or needing, like those double-handed Deagle sidecars. Fastest reload is a second Desert Eagle .50, as everyone knows. Continue to watch this live stream. I'm not sure what next week's is going to be. It's probably going to be Lucas doing something cool. It will be Wednesday at 4:30 p.m., so you can watch that. You can also subscribe to our podcast, and you can also subscribe to our newsletter. I'm not going to say why you should subscribe to our newsletter, apart from the fact that it would be a good way to keep in touch with us if our YouTube channel went away mysteriously, but there's also some other reasons you should subscribe to our newsletter. So head over to the T-Rex Arms website, subscribe to the newsletter, or there's probably a link at the bottom of this video description. And thanks so much for watching and taking this little tour around the shambles that is the production line reshuffle. I'm hoping that after we get everything in place, prove that it all works, work out a few of the bugs, we'll do another one of these and talk about some of the improvements that we've made and ways that they've helped things out. So that'll be fun. And we'll make sure that Chad has a longer HDMI cable so we can go a few more places. So put that on the Amazon list, Charles. Oh wait, no, not the Amazon list. B&H. Don't give money to Jeff Bezos. Some B&H, yes. Much better. Thank you so much for watching, you guys, and we'll see you next week.